That's number 15. Mr. Riggs?
15 was on the consent.
Right, so we'll go to 17, which is not.
Before we go to 17, Mr. Phillips, do you know if you're, the party you were waiting for is present?
He's not. He's running late. He'll probably get here around 10:30, which...
Well, maybe it'll be best to skip over this one. We got, I guess, a discharger, right? His discharger representative.
He was here for additional questions. He didn't have any concerns about what had been proposed up to this point.
But if he's on his way, it probably makes sense to pass over this item.
So we're going to skip the 24?
Okay.
Let's see. Yeah, 24. I don't think anybody else is waiting for 17, as far as I know. I don't have any other cards up here. Okay.
Okay, the Guadalupe Settlement Fund. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you. This concerns funding for the Cooperative Monitoring Program for the now infamous agricultural waiver that is conditioned agricultural waiver. Conditions are the important thing, not the waiver part. And we have a dual presentation today with Allison Jones starting off and then Julia Dyer chiming in. Also, while they're getting set up, I'll point out that we have a supplemental sheet that was mailed out. It's prepared on November 23rd. And this actually provides a lot of the detail that the board was interested in when we last discussed this topic. Yes, sir.
I was just going to backtrack just 1 second, and maybe as part of the presentation with the your list on page 3 of items, uh-huh, with the 8x10 glossy.
Mm-hmm.
If staff has any idea as to what additional scientific information might fill in the gaps based on what Dr. Press has suggested,
right,
maybe as part of that overview, we could start to focus on how we might be thinking about how to get academia involved in this. So, okay, back to this.
Okay, good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Allison Jones. I am the lead staff person on the conditional waiver, the strongly conditioned waiver for irrigated agriculture. We presented a request for funding in September for startup money and initial monitoring under the Cooperative Monitoring Program. Just let me take a second to go through what we presented in the supplemental sheet. We were sort of in a chicken and egg situation with all of this because in order to get the figures, you had to do some preliminary work, and there was no one funded to do the preliminary work. So we've been able to fill that in and get some what we think are good, reasonable numbers on this, and hopefully I'll answer some of the questions that the board had from the last meeting. We went through, once we had budget numbers that were submitted from the nonprofit foundation, Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc., then we were able to use those numbers to generate that table that you see. It was attachment 2, and it goes through different options, and I'll go through that in a little more detail, but basically we developed 3 possible options. One was the actual numbers that were submitted, that which is option 1, and then some various scenarios for ways that possibly we could reduce that. Option 3 being then within the money that the board approved with the addition of PG&E funding that's going to be requested in the next item. So just to go back a little bit, the Cooperative Monitoring Program was really developed as an alternative to individual monitoring. And it's something new. There is precedent for group-type monitoring, but this is something that's been being done in this region on a scale that's not been done elsewhere, at least in the state of California. And when you're trying to start a new program, there's so many things to be considered and so many unanticipated expenses, I would say, and difficulties. And I have to say that over the last few months, the agricultural industry has been working really diligently to get this program put together, to get their committees established. And I'm really impressed with the amount of progress that we've seen so far. The goal of the cooperative monitoring program is really to be able to see whether the waiver is effective over time. So as a result of all this activity of getting farm plans in place and implementing management practices that are being tracked under the waiver, is it going to be having an effect over time? And in order to do that, the industry themselves will need to run the program and finance the program in the long term. So the funding is really to get that started, to help enable that to occur. We're going to be obviously conducting water quality monitoring, and in two areas in the northern part of the region, in the Salinas and Elkhorn Slough areas that are heavily agricultural areas, and then in Santa Maria. The other piece of this that I think is just as important is to enable the agricultural industry to develop the capacity to conduct this kind of monitoring on a long term, because it's just something that hasn't existed up until now. And what we're seeing is that it does take a lot of effort. There's been hearing lots of feedback on how many meetings and how much, setting up committees, getting everything in place, really how much effort it's taken. And then also another piece of this that maybe we hadn't discussed a lot was how this effort is leveraging regional board activities, because we are also developing a program from the ground up here, and the efforts of the ag industry really complement and support what we're doing. So, and I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end when I make the recommendation, but I think it's good to be aware that we need that help as well, and for the program to succeed, this is going to be a critical piece for us as well. The board in September approved an amount of $504,000 from the Guadalupe Settlement Fund, and that was for program development and to conduct monitoring at 10 sites in the Santa Maria and also Flaco watersheds. An additional $250,000 is being requested from the PG&E Settlement Fund to monitor 15 sites in Elkhorn Slough and Salinas watersheds. So the total estimated budget in September was about $754,000, and that was based on primarily on staff estimates. Okay. Both the funds that we're talking about and any settlement funds that the board has the opportunity to distribute usually have some sort of a match or leveraging requirement. Under PG&E, there's a 25% match requirement, and with the request of $250,000, it's estimated that will be a $62,500 match required for the PG&E funding. Under Guadalupe funds, there's not a required match, but leveraging should be considered, and I think it's really important to look at the leveraging that's going to be obtained through this project. Okay. The grower dues are one way that the cost match can be achieved, and although there's no mechanism yet in place to assess dues from the growers themselves, for the growers to assess themselves for monitoring costs, that's part of what is required under the waiver order. So they've already taken some initial steps in setting up cost allocation committees to start figuring out how to do that. So they anticipate that it will be toward the end of the year before they'll actually have that set in place. In order to develop a fair cost allocation, they need broad representation across the region from all the different groups and all the different participants. So just getting all that set in place is probably going to take some time. But in order for them to meet the match, this is one way they could do it, and it will be in place by the time that the PG&E project is underway or is before it's completed. The other leveraging that I think is taking place and will continue to take place is outreach and compliance assistance to the agricultural community. And just as an example, I have a list of about 31 workshops and meetings that are scheduled over the next 6 or 7 weeks to help people enroll, fill out their notice of intent forms, explain the forms. So the ag groups that are involved in the monitoring are also really helping people get on board with the program to understand what the requirements are. And I was really impressed that there's meetings scheduled right up to January 1st and then afterwards to help people complete their farm plans and do their evaluations of their, for their positive point systems for the vineyard people. So there's a lot going on, and it's helping us a lot because we do presentations. We've been doing workshops as well, but we need their help to get this thing, get the word out. It's just impossible for us to do it by ourselves. So I think that's really an important piece of this, that having the industry involved in this program is helping tremendously. And also coordinating industry efforts and coordinating technical assistance efforts. So they can do things that it's more difficult for us to do in terms of coordination. Then, as I said, farm plan development, management practice implementation down the long run. So all of these things, having an industry support and involvement in this program and this process, I think will pay benefits over the year and then long term. So when the board approved the $504,000, there was discussion that certain things needed to happen before the funding would become available. And so we went ahead and are in the process of amending an existing contract to complete some preliminary startup tasks. So in the scope of work that you got, there are two tasks that were identified as startup that encompassed a lot of the things that needed to happen right away so that monitoring can start January 1st. Those included things like setting up the agricultural committee, which was actually a requirement under the order, and the committees are in place. They have both agricultural committee and subcommittees to do cost allocation, identify monitoring site locations, and setting up a nonprofit corporation, and that is the Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc., and they've completed their paperwork and filed paperwork to get nonprofit status. Staffing and funding support just to get these things to happen needed to happen right away. Funding for long term, there were grant applications due, the PG&E applications were due, so getting some staffing to get that together. Developing a quality assurance project plan. So some of the subtasks there were releasing a request for proposals, getting responses back, and then getting a quality assurance project plan developed and then approved by staff here. So that's all occurred. They do have approved QAP. And then developing the program budget. So the next step, developing an RFP for the cooperative monitoring program itself to get some bids so that they could submit numbers to us for what they thought it would cost, and reviewing the proposals and then developing the bid package. So what we have under the option three, the Central Coast Preservation Inc.'s estimated costs were an average of the bids that they received after they removed the high and the low bids. And when we looked at the numbers, the monitoring component basically came out. Did I miss that? the monitoring component was $648,000 plus a little bit more, which is very close to staff's original estimate of $650,000. The program administration component came out to something around $224,000. Original staff estimate was about $100,000. And as I said before, there's some leveraging and some costs that we didn't necessarily anticipate from the perspective of running just a monitoring program, and that maybe there's some more costs there that need to be considered, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But their total estimated budget then is $872,000, which was more than the proposed $750,000 that staff had originally estimated. So we went through and looked at possible ways to reduce some of those costs. We wanted to make sure that there was an option that could come in with what the board approved. And the way to get to that $750,000 total, there was a number of things that we felt could be reduced. One was to reduce the follow-up monitoring. The monitoring reporting program basically requires a 25% of the monitoring budget to be used for follow-up monitoring. The 25% was calculated on the total of the monitoring, and there were parts of that that didn't need to be included in that calculation. So when we recalculated it, we found a savings of about $36,000 there. There was a policy manager position in there, and we felt that that was something that could be eliminated. The report writing was estimated about $56,000, and under our monitoring reporting program, there is not really much of a requirement for written reports. We require electronic submittal of data that can go into our monitoring program and our analysis tools. But the industry felt that there was a need for some workshops to explain monitoring data, to review the data, and to help the community and ag community understand it better. So there's a higher number for report writing than we would have suggested, and that's something that I think we could consider either way. And then the executive manager position, and our original thinking was that there were two basically half-time positions, a northern and a southern, and partly just the geographic distribution of the region and the logistics of people traveling to meetings and these committees getting together. What it's turned out is that it makes more sense in many cases to have some northern and southern subcommittees and then sort of an overall umbrella person that could look, you know, kind of pull it, keep it all together and handle some of the administrative tasks. So even though we say here that's a possibility, eliminating that position, I think there are some arguments to be made that there's some use for that position. So I can talk about that in a bit. So under option one would be to fully fund the original proposal that the industry came back with in the amount of $872,000. And again, there's more emphasis on the outreach and the communication with industry and with the grower community than we originally anticipated. But I think there can be some benefit in that, obviously, and some leveraging of regional board resources as well. And also, as I mentioned, the geographic considerations, the size of the region, the traveling considerations and things like that. So that was option one. Option two would be to eliminate a number of those things, the executive manager, the policy manager, adjust the follow-up monitoring costs to reduce that by $36,000, and then keep the full report writing funding with the thinking that maybe the need for that information is greater than we anticipated in our need for information. So that would be about $78,000. Now, this isn't. I added two other options that were not included in your supplemental sheet, just for consideration. There's sort of variations on option two, and then option two is basically a partial funding. It's not, you know, not within the original budget, but it's not as high as what the industry proposed. And that would be to fund the executive manager position, eliminate the policy manager, which is a $9,000 savings, adjust the follow-up monitoring costs, as we said earlier, and retain the report writing. And that would be end up at a total of about $820,000, which is about an additional $66,000 from what the board approved. So that would be just increasing the $504,000 to about $570,000. Okay. And then another option would be to fund the executive manager position, eliminate the policy manager, adjust the follow-up monitoring, and reduce the report writing. Again, it's sort of a decision, a judgment call of how much reporting and how many workshops and how much information needs to be presented to the industry. So that would end up with a total of $792,000, and that's an additional about $39,000 out of the settlement fund beyond what the board already approved. And then the third option would be to institute all the reductions that were itemized already, and that would bring the total amount down to just slightly under $750,000, which was what the original budget was estimated to be. Just very briefly, the status of the Guadalupe Fund right now, there's a total of $15.6 million, and the interest it's earning is about 3% a year, so it's approximately $465,000 that the fund is earning annually. And the amount requested out of that fund is, you know, ranging between $504,000 and $622,000. It's a little about 1.5 times the annual earnings on the fund. So staff's recommendation is that the board approve the scope of work and budget for option 3 with the addition of the executive manager position. So that would be an additional $38,500 from the fund. And consider adding also the report writing, the additional reporting.
Allison, is that the same as 2B?
That is, I think so, yes. Yes, it is.
So option 3 with addition of the executive manager is the same as 2B?
I thought
it was 2C.
2C. Sorry. Oh,
2C. 2C. If you add the report
the
writing,
reporting.
It's 2B.
Okay.
Yeah.
Allison, I just want to be absolutely clear. I'm looking at page 2 of the supplemental sheet, budget issues. These options that you're talking about mm-hmm. are per year options, or are they initial? Is just a one time, or is it a per year? It's not crystal clear from the.
This entire budget encompasses about 15 months. So it's the startup that's already occurred plus the year.
But are you saying that then you would be back before the board after 15 months for a similar sum or not?
No. What we anticipate is that possibly there will be some grant funding that will come through.
Okay.
But if that doesn't happen, then the industry is getting their
right.
cost allocation.
The reason I ask is because you put up the Guadalupe Fund, you put up an interest rate and showed that the request was was an exceedance of
yeah.
the annual yield.
Yes.
But of course, that's less important if you're not talking about a multi-year.
Yeah,
if you're not going back year after year. No, I just wanted to be
right,
clear on that.
Right,
that's
no, okay. It wasn't
so
anticipated.
This is a one-time
yes.
thing. Thank you.
Allison, where is the industry going to get the PG&E matching funds?
Anticipated that the dues that are going to be collected later.
We'll fill that in.
If the PG&E grant goes for actually, I think the project is anticipated to be extended for a year and a half, and that will allow time for them to collect those. They may get it earlier than that.
And with the Guadalupe funds, do we retain those funds through that 15-month period until they actually need the money, so that we're getting the interest on it and not the nonprofit group?
The funds are paid out. Yeah, they're invoiced against.
Okay.
So yeah, they
against
stay.
Against expenditures.
They stay there.
Are they proposed expenditures or current?
Well, there's some that have already been incurred.
Okay.
And then they'll go forward from here, and so
okay.
then they would invoice for what's occurring.
Okay. So 2C, then, if we look at on the attachment, the yellow pages would fit in as just a variant of what we see as option 2 at 777-979.
Right.
Okay. All right.
I apologize for, you know, adding things to at the last minute.
Please.
I wanted the...
Mr. Austin, please. He's a family friend, so don't.
Because usually we have people evicted.
Right. I don't have a marshal here or a bailiff either.
Well, there's usually a thing that comes out of the ceiling and just grabs you and picks you up and.
and disappears.
I don't know why that thing's not working.
Yeah. So we'll just settle for humiliation.
I just wanted to add that I wanted the board to have see what other options might be considered under that somewhat intermediate possibility, because with in additional discussion that always occurs after you put these things together, it really became clear that the needs for sort of this geographic and then having some sort of an umbrella position would seem to be pretty important. And also, I've just been really impressed with the level of work that's going into getting the information out to the whole industry, and it's tremendous help. If you remember, in some of our staff reports, we talked about the 22 positions that have been authorized by the legislature for ag waiver implementation around the state, and the Region 3's allocation has come to be 2 PYs, and we had hoped a little bit more than that. So we're definitely working on a tight budget here.
Another follow-up question. You're talking about the kind of the cash flow and the invoicing business. Since they don't have the cost allocation and fee collection in place, how can they do the work and just invoice it for repayment?
We were included in those startup funds that we have. Well, that's a good point. But what we included in the startup was up to about 2 months past January, so about 4 months in the startup to get things going. So then they can start invoicing.
So there's a little upfront money built into it.
Right.
Okay. Should we move to public comment?
No, I have